This is the Home Tech Podcast Show number 77, recorded on June 14th, 2012. I am your host, Jim Collison, broadcasting live and commercial-free from the AverageGuy.tv studios here in Stormy. We had a big thunderstorm just roll through about an hour ago. I thought for a second we may not get the show off. We lost power 3 or 4 times in the process. Thank goodness all the PC equipment's on UPS's and it all stayed up for us. Storm's gone through, and we post the show each week out at the AverageGuy.tv. And now that Andrew's back doing the show notes, those are as good as they have ever been. Thank you, Andrew, for doing that each and every week. You can contact the show podcast at theaverageguy.tv. Track me down on Twitter at Jay Collison or follow the show schedule on a Twitter account we've established just out at theaverageguy.tv. You also have all the links to automatically download or stream the audio or video podcast to iTunes, YouTube, Zune, Stitcher, or many of the other podcast catcher applications that are out there. It's right on the front page of theaverageguy.tv. In the last couple of weeks, we have been streaming live to YouTube, and it has just been fantastic. It's totally changed the way the video works. We can now share screens, and you can actually read them, which is amazing. We did some work with it last night on the home server show, and it's crazy. You can actually read them now. So thank you, YouTube and Google, for making that available to us. And we stream it each week out at theaverageguy.tv/live. Of course, when you're out there, you can find us on YouTube or iTunes or Google Plus just by searching, and even on Facebook, by searching The Average Guy Podcast. We recently have established both a Average Guy page and an Average Guy group. And the page is for announcements and the group is for conversation. And so if you want to join us in conversation around what we talk about on the show, there are a couple of the guys, there's a handful of us out there that have some active communication. Just head out to Facebook, search for The Average Guy Podcast. You can leave notes or messages on either one, but the group is the one that's most active, and the page has all the links for all the show information. So give it a try. Check it out. If you've got any questions, you can drop me a line, podcast@theaverageguy.tv. When you're out there, like the page and join the group, and we'll get you in on the conversation. It's kind of a precursor to forums. I don't really want to build a whole set of forums for the show at this point, and Facebook works just great for that. So join us out there for the conversation. All right, let's welcome the guys and announce who they are and let them know. Of course, all the way to the left, and as I always say, my brother from another mother, that's Andrew Morris down there in Melbourne. Andrew, how are you?
I'm doing well, Jim.
It's always good to have you on. Andrew, how are things in your neck of the woods? It's getting chilly, right? Fall's on its way. Winter's almost there.
Yeah, we're full swing into winter, so we're starting to get snowfall on the hills, and the resorts are starting to open up, and we're starting to get our first heavy frosts in the overnight on the car and whatnot in the morning, so it's all happening.
I see that you lost your razor in the process. It got cold and you lost your razor. Is that kind of...
Well, not as badly as I lost it last week.
Well, always good to have you. We've been messing around with these lower thirds, and I see you have them up. Actually, Brian and Gary, you guys can, as I talk about this, you can actually install these during the show. It works out pretty well. So what's happened is the Google Hangout has become a platform now, and they have developers writing applications for Google Hangout, which is kind of interesting. So there's a volume control application. There's a Hangout photo sharing application. There's always been like YouTube. There was always a handful of applications that were out there when it first launched. But there's some really good developers starting to develop some really useful tools for the Hangouts. One of them is these lower thirds. You can see it on my screen right now. Version 1, I think we may have talked about this last week. The guy that developed it started the idea on May 14th, had a working version 1 by May like 17th or 18th, and is already on 1.0.5, so he's moving pretty quick on the development of it. If you go to Google Plus and search just Hangout Lower Third, there's a link out there to click, and it just installs in your browser window. So if you're using lower thirds for any reason, I don't know why you'd do it unless you're podcasting or you want your family to be impressed by having your name lower third as you're talking to them. Very cool. And they're just doing some really rapid deployment. So cool indeed. Again, Google Plus. And actually, this Hangout Lower Third is also available right through the apps, the add apps. On the top of the Hangout screen, there's a little section that says Plus Add App. And if you click on that, Hangout Lower Third is the first option in the left-hand corner, upper left-hand corner, so you can get it from there too. Mike Howard had that done and installed last week in just a matter of seconds. And so some cool things you can do with it. Actually, the new iteration has – they moved the Hangout over so you could see – there used to be a little see-through Google Plus or Google Hangout kind of icon in the bottom. It would be your left-hand corner of the screen. As soon as he moved that over, Google took it off, the see-through Hangout thing. So I don't know if they're messing with them or what the deal is, but certainly I love the development, the quick development that's going on the Google Plus Hangout platform. All right. Also, you see, Gary got – there you go, Gary. Very nice. I saw yours click in and out. Gary Johnson, of course, is Christian's dad and joins us whenever Christian is out. He's doing his internship, but let me know a little bit before the show, hey, I'm not feeling very well, so Gary's filling in and always does a bang-up job. Gary, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jim.
You bet. Good to have you. And your new microphone's working out well?
Yeah. Nope. When I remember to set it up.
Well, it sounds great. It looks great. So some good stuff from you, and where I know you're putting stuff in the show notes already. So thanks for coming on and filling in for Christian.
Not a problem. Are you seeing my lower third, or is it not loading?
You need to hit the on button and all the way on the very top, or make sure it's loaded. Make sure the load and unload is working. Mess around with it a little bit. We can see it now. It'll be backwards. This was one of the bigger major complaints that I saw in the forums. Is for you, it shows backwards, and everyone's like, "Oh, it's backwards." But for us, it shows correctly. So. We're seeing it right. See how easy that was? Very nice job.
Yeah, I hit the load and it didn't pop, so this time it did.
Yeah, awesome. And what'd you put on the bottom there? What's it say? It says your name, and then what did you write in the tag?
From the man cave.
From the man cave.
and Andrew, you're the international correspondent. Very nice. Well, a guy who had joined us, boy, that was 4 or 5 weeks back, and we talked about battery recycling, and that was very cool, and he's back again. And we call him Yoda Fett, but his name's Brian. Brian, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing well.
Good to have you. Now, we were earlier in the pre-show, we were getting a lot of background noise from you. It seems to have calmed down, but what do you have in that room? You mentioned a bunch of stuff, so what's behind you that we can't see?
Well, for those of us really old, in the far corner you see my Death Star still.
Okay.
Gotta have one of those still around, yeah. That's basically the junk end of the... my IT stuff's all basically facing me from the...
Right.
Where the computer's at.
So what do you actually have running from a server or PC standpoint? What do you got running in there? I know you got a bunch of stuff running.
I have two Core 2 quads. For both my two main desktop and for my VMware server. I have Core 2 Quad also for a Macintosh using a Dell Optiplex 755.
Hackintosh?
That's a Hackintosh.
Okay.
I have an i3 2100 running my home server.
Okay.
I have three micro servers.
Nice. Very good. Welcome to the club. Or you are the club.
One of those is my SAN, and the other one is a backup for my church I do IT work for.
Okay.
And then the one that you see on the table beside me with the PC is my test box, just because it's nice and handy and dandy to throw drives in and out of.
That microserver that's right next to you is your test box?
Yeah, that's my test box. Right now it's running Windows 8.
Oh, very cool.
With a, it
should 8. Run very well on that.
Runs very well. The one that I have in the show notes is actually real well is my tablet running Windows 8.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that here in just a second. I'm actually running Windows 8 on a... HP DM1 and a little E350 processor, and the new refresh of the release. I keep calling it release candidate of the preview. What are we calling that thing? Customer preview, preview release, release preview. Let's just call it the beta. actually running really well, and I'm getting ready to do some demos on it at work. I think I'm going to give a Windows 8 class on what's coming up, and release preview. Thank you, Tim. Appreciate that. So working out real well. Brian, you mentioned you've got it running on a tablet. What do you have? What's the tablet specs on that? And how did you get that running on a tablet?
It's a Latitude ST tablet, which is an Atom Z760. that runs with 2 gig of RAM and 128 gig SSD.
Okay, so that's a tablet, but it's really a PC, right? I mean, it's a PC just jammed into a tablet space?
It's a PC jammed into a mil-spec space tablet, so I can drop it from 5 feet, don't break anything.
Right. Do you...
Have you ever tried that?
Yes, we have. I've unfortunately had one drop from 25 feet and survive.
Oh, wow. It must have landed correctly, right? Because the screen, if it lands on the screen, it's going to break, right?
This one actually has a fairly resistant screen on it, and we have a sort of an OtterBox shell around it.
All right, so serious ruggedness. Does it need fans? I mean, you got fans in there to keep that Atom processor cool, or does that thing run just on...
It runs... pure cool pretty much all the time. So.
Okay. And that's, so it's a Z760. I haven't heard of that Atom processor. How does that compare to like the 425s and the 525s and that those series of Atom processors?
The 525 screams compared to it.
Okay. So it's a fairly, you're saying it's a fairly slow processor.
1.5 dual core, no hyper threading.
Okay. But Windows 8 running on it, how's the performance been?
Windows 8 runs a lot better compared to Windows 7 on it. Windows 7, basically, we were trying to turn everything off just to get it to work. We use it in our company for shipping. So while people are loading the trucks, the shippers can literally be checking stuff in and off on it instead of having to run back and forth to the PCs.
And you said in the notes you've got most of the features, the Windows 8 features, turned off.
No, I have Windows 7, we had to turn all the features off. Windows 8, they can all be turned on.
Oh, okay. So works. So lighter footprint, works better in Windows 8. Windows 7, you just got to shut everything off to make it work?
Yeah.
Okay. Very cool. And is that a full-time, I mean, you're carrying that around full-time? You're using it full-time? Or is it just kind of sporadic use?
It's not replaced the iPad.
Why not?
Well, the iPad works just better, unfortunately.
Well, in what way does it work better? I mean, where do you find yourself using it more or grabbing that instead of grabbing the Windows 8 tablet?
I have just about every app I need to do my job loading on the iPad through hunting apps down. So I do everything from AD management to configuring cameras to remote controlling every PC in my company.
All on the iPad?
All on the iPad.
Okay. And that's not available, or you just haven't set that up on the Windows 8?
I can do most of it on Windows 8. I just find it lagging a little bit. Okay. iPad a little bit more intuitive.
No, but that iPad processor is a little bit faster than the one you got in the tablet, right?
They're about equal.
I mean, so?
You're comparing ARM to...
Yeah.
x86.
So. Sure. Yeah, it's not it's maybe not apples to apples. So, no pun intended.
Then again, I can play Star Wars Jedi Knight on my Windows tablet. So.
Okay. All right. Well, very cool. I am Gary. Have you loaded Windows 8 on anything there that you've been? I know you're not a huge Windows 8 fan. I know that right off the bat.
Just kidding. Actually, I have it on a desktop behind me on a spare box that I've played with a little bit, which is one of the reasons I don't like it very well. And I haven't updated to the latest release because it sounds like the actual release isn't all that far off. So
I think it's coming pretty quick.
Yeah, that's what it seems like. And actually, the one platform that I'm really interested in throwing it on, because you've been raving about it on a tablet platform, I've got my little Asus Netbook tablet, the EPC T101MT, which has a Intel Atom dual core with hyper-threading. And it's a pretty good little PC, runs Windows 7 fine. So I think that might be the ideal early beta platform for the final Windows 8. And the main reason I want to wait until the final comes out with that is because hopefully I can do an upgrade rather than an install that has to be removed again and cleaned up. And that way some of the applications that I've got on there that are registered and paid for and whatnot will stay with the Windows 8 install. So that's my plan going forward.
Okay.
Let's see how that works.
All right. That's your plan and you're sticking to it?
Pretty much.
All right. Very cool. Andrew, what have you, over the last couple of weeks, have you been messing around with Windows 8? Has work just too busy?
No, I had a bit of a play with it after we spoke about it last. I've got a Windows 7 or laptop running Windows 7 that I created a VHD installation on, and dual booted. And look, my take is it's much better than the release candidates, but they're going to have to do a bit more polish to sell me on it.
Yeah, I don't disagree. It's got still has some holes. I mean, it's really going to be version 1 of it.
Yeah, I'm still not a fan of the Metro interface.
You know, it takes a little bit of getting used to, and I think at first I didn't like it, but as I've used it almost daily now for, you know, various things, you know, it just, there's some things that just become habit, and you don't worry about it anymore, and using the side UI isn't too difficult, and you know, go bottom left-hand corner to get the start menu back, and if you need the settings, go all the way over to the right, and, you know, you kind of, now, I think it works great on a single screen, you know, single monitor laptop. It's a really pretty good OS for an underpowered PC, and I would even say, now, I don't know how it's going to work from a compatibility standpoint, but I'd even say, if you had laptops that were struggling with Windows 7, you may be able to revive them with Windows 8. And so if you've got some old equipment around and you just, you know, it struggled to do something. Although I'd be hard-pressed to get that because Windows 7 was better than Vista, and, you know, they keep getting a little bit better as they, at least from a speed perspective, they seem to get a little bit faster or not quite so CPU intensive. So, yeah. But if you have a PC that's struggling to run Windows 7, I would say Windows 8 would run very well on that. I've been having trouble talking the last couple days.
You got any idea? I've been reading today that Microsoft has a major announcement scheduled in L.A. for Monday.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, there's some stuff going on. Andrew, I'm sorry, we cut you off. What were you going to say?
Oh, I was going to say my experience on this particular bit of hardware, which I think is a Core 2 Duo 9600 or something like that. Windows 8's actually slower. Got Windows 7 booting off of VHD as well, so they're both pretty much the same style of install.
Okay.
I guess the real litmus test for me would be to give it to Michelle and see what how she finds the experience, because I think I'm looking for the power user experience still.
Right, right. I'll be honest, I don't think I dare give it to Sarah. I'm not going to upgrade her laptop.
You don't want to catch it in the back of the head, right?
No, I do not. No. No. Windows 7 works great for her, and she's comfortable with it, and she has everything she needs. Her next upgrade will be an SSD. And that will speed some things up for her. We just put more RAM in that laptop, and it's a Core 2 Duo. It should go for a while before we need to replace it. An SSD will really, you know, pick things up for her. When Windows 7 came out, I raced and put Windows 7 on everything. You know, it was like, okay, I'm upgrading. I'm going to upgrade her laptop. I'm going to upgrade the kids' PCs. I don't have that same with Windows 8. I'm kind of like, well, I guess I'll upgrade when I have to. Brian, you got any plans to move on to Windows 8 anytime soon, onto anything, or even after release, is it kind of just going to be fun to play with or put it on your tablet type of OS?
At this point, I'm pretty much waiting for Windows 9.
Well, so that answers that question.
Interestingly enough, I was on TechNet a couple nights in a row watching some of the video discussing Server 8, which basically is the congruent platform for server, desktop, tablet for the Windows 8 rollout. And there seems to be some really neat features in Server 8 that are coming out for, you know, managing domain controllers and things at the enterprise level that seem attractive. So the Windows 8 rollout may actually be more advanced and more mature at the server level than it is at either the desktop or the tablet level, from what I was watching on TechNet.
Yeah, you make a good point. We've focused on the consumer deployment of Windows 8, but we haven't really spent much time on the server side.
I think that's the point that's relevant here, is that the buzz at the consumer and the chat level is from the bottom up, but it may be that Microsoft is actually developing more intensively from the top down. Because some of the things in the server platform that they were discussing seem to already be in place, pretty well thought out, pretty useful for the enterprise level guys. There was a presentation in front of a live audience, and there was a lot of applause when they announced how to handle some of the things for replicating domain controllers and things of that nature. So it seems like a pretty well received product at the enterprise level.
Well, Gary, you might be right on this with the server being kind of the dark horse in this, right? I mean, with the consumer side, we've spent so much time talking about the consumer offerings. Now, you know, granted, the server stuff isn't that sexy, right? I mean,
right.
But for the guys who have to do that day in and day out, that's a pretty.
From a corporate standpoint, it would make sense that, you know, Microsoft would want to have that foundation in place and pretty well debugged and solid before they actually focus on doing the cleanup and the integration from the desktop and the tablet level. So like I say, it was kind of a surprising thing for me to listen to this presentation and go, hey, wait a minute, maybe I have got this backwards, and maybe there is some light at the end of this tunnel that'll make me a believer at some point.
Hmm.
Interesting thing to consider.
Yeah, although traditionally they tend to release the server platform about 6 months after the desktop. So maybe they're going to go the other way around this time.
I think they may come at the exact same time, to be honest with you, Andrew. I don't think they'll do them separately. I think they'll be very, very close.
Wouldn't, you know, from a corporate strategy, and we've talked in my rant sections many times about what doesn't seem logical to me, but wouldn't that be the logical next step for Microsoft to take, is that Windows 8 across the spectrum rolls out at the same time, so that you have the server, the platform, the desktop, the tablet, and everything is ready to go cross-platform. I think that's the attractiveness that Microsoft can present and market, that basically there is nobody else in that space that's doing that across the board with that much depth and breadth to go the whole gamut.
Yeah,
that's true.
I can see that. I mean, I can see it and working real well. You know, their bread and butter from a software assurance standpoint, of course. Well, I shouldn't say it that way, because server does bring in. We lost Brian. I'm trying to bring him back in now, but he'll be back here in just a sec. Yeah, but you bring up an interesting point, and server's maybe more mature and ready to go, and certainly worked on by a different teams. They're not, from what I understand, they're not going to abandon the Metro UI, even at the server level. It's going to have some Metro interface. Those network admins are going to rip that thing out just as quickly as they possibly can.
In a heartbeat.
I don't see that. Yeah. I don't see that lasting very long.
But I'm actually probably going to install that first. I've got some spare boxes that I got capacity on, and I'm thinking of taking the run at the preview and the beta of Server 8 probably real soon to just see what that does on the domain and how I can integrate it and what kind of features that brings to the table, and whether or not Metro is intrusive and needs to be ripped out, or if it's implemented differently and it's actually functional at the server level. So That'll be a fun thing to explore, I think.
Yeah. No, I think, and based on your household, I think you'll really appreciate that. I mean, you guys got some server stuff running in the background. Last night on the Home Server Show, we talked a little bit about, hey, welcome back, Brian. Last night on the Home Server Show, we talked a little bit about there is kind of a window into some of the integration problems between Windows 8 and Server 8. When you look at the Windows Home Server beta issues they're having. So we looked at Home Server, and they've released a patch for all the Colorado products. So Small Business Server, Home Server, all based on 2008 R2. And Windows 8, the client, there's 15 bugs there that they're having problems with that they're asking people to beta test for them and help them kind of overcome. Now, that's not Server 8 and Windows 8. That's 2008 R2 and Windows 8, so maybe there's a little bit difference there. But I think there's going to be some things to work out between the client and between the desktop and the server. But we got some interesting days ahead. Brian, can you hear us? Are you back? Check your mute. We're not hearing you yet.
I'm back.
Oh, good, awesome. You made it back in. Google kicked you out, huh?
Yeah, Google plugin trying to get the Hangout lower third.
Oh, it got you. Yeah, did you get it? Did you get it up and running yet?
No. Okay. Still.
Well, don't mess with
on it.
Yeah, don't mess with it. I'm going to ask you about this Verizon Media Manager update. What are you using? Tell me a little bit about that, and what does that do for you, and how are you using it?
Verizon Media Manager was my answer to streaming video in my house before Windows Home Server 2011 came out. It is a app that you can run on any desktop. I just run it on my home server that any of my pictures, audio, or video files I put out there streams to my set-top boxes in my house.
Your Verizon set-top boxes, so it's proprietary to that, or is that?
It's proprietary to the set-top boxes.
Okay.
But it means I don't have to have a HTPC in every room. I can just watch it straight through the standard set-top box that my TV's connected to.
Sure, sure. So how much are those boxes?
They're the standard table boxes that you rent on a monthly basis. So
$3 a month or whatever they are?
I think it's $12.95 for the DVRs and $9.95 for the HD sets.
And so Verizon provides your wireless, or I mean your cable, your TV stuff?
Yeah, I'm Verizon. I'm on Verizon Fios, so I have a fiber optic to the side of my house, providing both phone, TV, and data.
Gary, is that the same thing you guys have?
Yeah, I actually had that set up and running, and just from a cost standpoint, I mean, I just realized I had so many computers laying around the house that it was cheaper for me to get rid of the set-top boxes and not rent them and convert just to the M-cards. So I pay $3.99 per M-card. I got two of those. And one of them is in my HTPC with a Seton card, which has four tuners in it. So the HTPC does all the heavy-duty recording. And then the other one is in my Silicon Dust HD Home Run, which is on the gigabit switch. So the whole house has access to live TV tuning through any computer in the house. So I got rid of all my set-top boxes, and actually one of them was an HD DVR, which was costing me like $20 a month. So I actually lowered my bill and got more functionality by switching to the HTPC plus the HD Home Run, one big screen in the living room, and everybody else has, you know, a 24-inch monitor on their desktop and in their bedroom, so they just watch it through their computer through the Silicon Dust, and it works great. We love it.
You guys use Media Center to then view all this?
Yeah, we use Windows Media Center, and the HTPC box, whenever it records a show, as soon as the recording is finished, it archives it down to my server in the basement on the RAID control, on the RAID box, which is the RAID 50 array, and that thing pumps out like 850 megabytes. It'll kill a LAN. I mean, it's incredible how much bandwidth that'll pump out. So everybody can watch recorded shows, live shows, anywhere in the house. It just works great. I use the Verizon Media Manager, and it works. It works well. It just cost effectively for me. I already had enough infrastructure that just going and getting rid of the set-top boxes was more cost effective.
Right. Hey, Gary, last week I told Christian if you ever did anything mean to him and he wanted another parent, that I would adopt him. But I'm wondering, would you adopt me?
See,
Go ahead, Brian.
I actually go reverse it, Gary. With the new set-top boxes they have, you can actually hook up a eSATA external box to be your new DVR to it. So where the big thing in the past was people were always worried about if my DVR crashes, I lose all my video, or if I have to send it back, everything I recorded that I've saved goes bye-bye. Nowadays, it stays in the magical five-letter word that Jim loves.
Starts with a D, ends with oboe.
Yeah.
I you know, they did have those ports locked out when I was using the set top boxes, but when you do that, does it encrypt it to be used only in that system? Because I know there was at one point some discussion with the DVRs adding an external drive. You could do that, but then you couldn't disconnect that internal drive and put it, connect it to something else and get it to play.
It is encrypted. Is it inaccessible? You have Christian in your house. I have me in my house. It's not inaccessible.
Okay, got it. Okay.
I routinely take the Drobo and connect it in over to my network and pull the videos from the Drobo onto my home server so that I can watch it on my iPad when I'm out traveling.
Gotcha.
So that's a manual step for you.
Yeah, it's a manual step of unplugging one cable and plugging in another cable.
Yeah.
I've already ran the cables to the Drobo itself.
Right. No, that yeah. works. I mean, it's what works for you, right?
Yeah, and then the other cool thing that we did was I've automatically got all those recorded TV directories on the RAID server are all tied into Subsonic, so we can access it from any platform outside and play recorded TV through the Subsonic interface. So you could do that on Android, Apple, regular PC, whatever. It really works great.
And Subsonic is cross-platform?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's all written in Java. And
You created an account for me last week. You and I were chatting, and you created a special account for me. I've yet to log into that.
I figured. I didn't notice you on there too often.
No, I was going to say, I'm sure you were waiting, just sitting there waiting for me to log in. And I need to try that. And it's a dynamite solution from media consumption.
Yeah, and the 4.7 release that he's working on, we just major release and much improved database. It's much faster. And I've got it pretty well debugged on one of my servers, and it's really slick, really works fast, really doing a great job.
And so if I logged into your Subsonic box now, is it 4.7? Is that the newest that you're running?
Yeah, 4.7 beta 2.
And that's the one we talked about a couple weeks ago, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Very good. All right, that's very cool. Actually, Brian, I had no idea Verizon. You know, we've talked about Fios before because the Johnsons have it, and Christian mentions it every single podcast. But as he rubs his bandwidth speeds in my face,
it really is awesome. And if I ever move, my first question is, does it have Verizon Fios? And if not, the deal's off the table. I don't care. It could be a used Trump mansion that they're selling me for $100. If it ain't got Verizon Fios, I'm not moving in.
Yeah. Just for Gary, then, you'd love this. The town I live in is actually the original testbed for Fios. I am less than 3 miles from the NetOps facility. And so, Mike Howard and company just don't like my 100 down and 35 up that I'm recently.
Oh, you got 135? That's wonderful. Yeah, I've got a consistent 43 down and 35 up, and boy, like I say, I go somewhere else and use somebody else's computer, and I can't use this. It's just terrible.
It's almost like when you switch from a spinning drive to SSD on your box.
Yep. Yep.
There's no going back. You're like, now it boots in like 10 seconds, and I'll never go back. So, well, okay, let's stop. Let's stop showing off, Gary and Brian. We know
we just need to bring Dave down here one day for just a single podcast. Just let him.
Oh, I know. No, he'll never leave.
Toe in the water.
It wasn't that long ago that I was the one that had all the bandwidth. You know, we're 25 down and 5 up, and I thought I felt pretty special. Andrew didn't have that much, but he's even upgraded to more than that. Andrew, you're 100, right? I mean,
I'm 100 down and 2.4 up.
Okay, so your up is still pretty weak.
Well, how often do you upload anything of any significant size? And
yeah, true.
When I say significant size, I mean over probably half a gig. Oh, sorry, half a terabyte.
What do you think the stream takes? This Google Hangout stream. What do you think we're sending up? How much bandwidth are we taking each as we send this thing up?
I can tell you.
At Christmas time, when we did the recording, when I was away, I did it over 3G connection. So, and there weren't any significant performance issues.
Okay.
Right now I'm showing upload output of 53 kilobytes. 73 kilobytes.
So not very. Oh, you know, Gary, it was interesting because as you said 53, your screen was kind of blurry, and then it went to 77 and it cleared up.
Yeah, now it's down to 2930. So, and then it bounces up to 60, 70 when I speak, okay. 80. So, yeah, when I come up and start transmitting, you can see the kilobits jumping
up.
So
less than 100.
Yep.
That's pretty efficient.
I would say.
Considering that we're sending audio and video, mm-hmm. I mean, does that seem a little low?
Yeah. But that's what it says. That's monitoring directly off my network card.
And Andrew, do you think there's some compression? I mean, there has to be, right? There has to be some video compression going on with this.
Oh, absolutely. I think Google are a lot smarter about their video compression than Skype are as well. Skype, from what I've seen in the past, and I've had a bit of a look at it, is a fair bit more bandwidth intensive. But then you get better. The video quality is that bit better as well.
Okay. Hey, let's talk about Skype a little bit because they've made some decisions to put advertising now right into your Skype stream, so to speak. If you've logged into Skype, if you've logged in recently or uploaded the most recent updates, and I didn't even really notice this till the other day. I was doing a video conversation with I think it was Rich O'Neill, and I saw this ad there. And to be honest, I didn't even think twice about it, but they're getting kind of obnoxious, Andrew. I mean, you've seen what they're doing. Your thoughts on ads right in the middle of your video?
I'll be working out which ad server they're going to and putting a local host file exclusion in so I don't see them.
So you're going to block them, is what you're saying.
That might not work, though, because a lot of times when I try to tune into the stream on the live stream, I have to disable my host file blocker to get in. In fact, I didn't even think about it. There's been many a times I've tried to connect here for the show, and I had trouble because I forgot to disable the host file blocker. Didn't do it tonight, and I'm in. So
yeah.
I don't know why. But
yeah, hopefully they're going to use the same ad server as they do for Live Messenger. So one of the workarounds for that, so you don't get the constant ads, is you put a host file entry to 127.0.0.1, which is your local machine for rad.msn.com, and that gets rid of all the ads in Live Messenger.
Yeah, that's one of the things I've talked about many times is if you go to that MVPS website, just Google MVPS host file blocker, and I use that all the time. They update it once a month, and they block all known bad sites and advertising, and does a great job.
Yeah, okay. I haven't played with that.
Yeah. So you dropped in chat, and this is a piece of software that I've tried several times over the last couple years, but have walked away from it every time I've tried it, and that's Ovoo, OOVOO. As a client, have you, Andrew, tried that in the past before? I know you threw that out as a Skype alternative, but is that ready for prime time? With competing directly against Skype.
We spoke about it, I think, around about a year ago when Skype got acquired by Microsoft, and it didn't look terribly polished back then, but now it looks a lot more polished, and it's got a lot more features. So there's a mobile client for pretty much every platform you can think of. It does voicemail sharing, high def video. Their video chat is free for up to, I think, 16 participants.
I think 12.
12, was it?
Yep, 12. Sorry. Mm-hmm. No, my bad. That's good. It's good.
And so to me, it's starting to look like a pretty strong competitor to Skype.
Brian or Gary, have you guys ever tried this Ovoo before?
No, the last testing I did was on, I started, one of the friends of mine in Texas is bugged me to help test Tango, and that seemed to work pretty well on the phone. Haven't used it on the desktop yet, but Ovoo's one I haven't worked with yet.
Brian? Oh, you're muted, buddy.
Not me.
Okay. The interesting thing about this, as I saw, is you can now send it directly out to YouTube, right? So we're using Google Hangouts to do that right now. But you can make these calls up to 12 folks, embed that, and send it right to YouTube. Now, again, I haven't tried this Andrew, any reason I would use something like this for podcasting as opposed to the Google Hangout?
Depends what their video quality is like. I think if their high def video is better than Hangout, then it'd be a possibility. Same with their audio stream. If they get a good quality audio stream with noise cancelling and the like, then it could be a serious competitor.
Yeah. Well, throw it out to chat if you're out there listening and you've tried Uvu before or recently. Now, it does seem like they've come on in the last year with a lot more than they were offering maybe a year or two ago. When we first started looking at doing video for the home server show, Uvu is one of the ones I looked at, and I installed it, and it didn't run very well on my PC. It was kind of a resource hog, and it did some terrible things. But maybe they've come a ways, and maybe they're better than they were before. You know, it's hard to beat the 17 billion people that are on Skype, Andrew. I mean, it's hard. You know, you would have to drive everybody to that platform, and it seems like everybody's on Skype at this point.
Yeah, ultimately, they need to be able to interface across to Skype.
Yeah, it would. You had mentioned in the notes, it would make a great, if you're going to do podcasts and you could say, hey, we podcast on this Uvu platform, you need to just create an account and join us there. I'm kind of stuck on Google Plus at the moment. It's working well for me, but I'd be interested in hearing from you. So if you're using Uvu or you've used it in the past, I'd maybe say within the last 6 months. If it was a couple years ago, it's probably changed a lot. If you got some questions or comments, either head out to the Facebook group and drop them out there or send me an email, podcast@theaverageguy.tv. Andrew, any other thoughts on that?
I guess it's a bit of a suck it and see, isn't it? If it's a serious competitor, then it'll prove itself.
You think we're getting to the point where
we can't see you, Gary. Your picture is you've covered yourself with a graphic. There we go. Okay.
Where the time is ripe for, you know, how, what was it, Trillion that took over consolidating all the IM, and now we need an app that consolidates all my Google Plus, Skype, Tango, Uvu, so that you got one interface and you just plug in the modules for each of the different platforms and you're ready to go on all of them at the same time?
I don't think video has been out there as wide as IM was. And in other words, I don't think there's five or six solid IM platforms, or I'm saying video platforms, like there were IM platforms.
That's what's emerging now, though. That's what I'm saying. So is the next step a consolidation platform?
I really only see two, though, at this point. I see Skype and I mean, serious contenders at this point.
Right.
I just see Skype and now Google Hangouts. So, and I see Skype maybe getting blended in with Link, which is Microsoft's, you know, unified office communicator product.
Right.
I don't know. I think that's maybe a good question. So, speaking of good questions, Andrew, one of those companies there in Australia has decided to tax its customers who are using IE7.
Yeah.
What is up with that?
So one of our online retailers, Kogan, who they manufacture TVs and DVD players and that kind of thing, and they're also a reseller for a lot of smartphones and the like. So you can buy iPhones off them, but they're a purely online seller. And I think they're also in the UK now as well. They have just decided to start adding a 6.8% surcharge for anyone still using Internet Explorer because of the issues they have with the lack of compliance with Internet Explorer for consistent look and feel across the browser platform due to the way it renders web pages. And the 6.8% comes from 0.1% for every month since IE7 was released. So when you go to the website in IE7, it actually pops up a browser window, something like, where are we? A lot like.
Yeah, just hit share
screen. A lot like that. in the the folks in chat.
Nice.
And they send you off to the links to Chrome, Firefox, Safari, and Opera, which all provide the same look and feel on their site when they're viewed.
Yeah, and you know there are some clients still coming off of, I shouldn't say clients, there are some enterprises still coming off IE6.
Yeah.
IE7 was their upgrade, so I think that's a real problem. We've got to find a way. We talk about this in our enterprise all the time. We've got to find a faster way to test and get browsers certified so that enterprise can move faster. We just can't have, we can't have that. You can't be on IE7. You got to be on 9. I mean,
well, we haven't even made IE9 mandatory yet.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
just because of the sheer volume of sites, internal sites that haven't been necessarily upgraded for appropriate support.
I know, it's crazy. Well, I think this is a good idea. That certainly the people being taxed think I'm an idiot. But it is a nice, it's kind of like, look, here's some motivation to move forward. And it's IE7's not a great experience, and we have trouble with it, and it costs us money. Don't come here on IE7. Use Chrome or something. I mean, but some enterprises, you can't do that. It's a sticky subject, isn't it?
Yeah, and look, a lot of our folk who, you know, point to Windows Update instead of the corporate internal servers, they got IE9. Months and months and months before it was certified for internal corporate use, and most of those guys had fairly significant issues with older versions of SharePoint and, you know, connecting to various Oracle web presented interfaces and things like that. And you're either running compatibility mode or you roll it back.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's always a corporate challenge. As soon as you add custom code into the mix, you open up yourself a can of worms.
Yeah, no, right on. And we've customized these applications to work in these certain browsers because we couldn't get them to work outside of the browser, and now they're stuck in there. And to move on is not very cost effective. So we got a problem on our hands, and we meaning the IT community. With folks still kind of married and stuck with their browsers, I just can't imagine folks coding anymore to be browser specific. But I'm sure it's still going to happen with HTML5 coming. You know, there's this weird changeover going on right now where, you know, do we use Flash? Do we use HTML5? You know, so it's kind of messy.
Mm. Yeah, but then you know, how long is it before Flash, you know, gets overrun by something bigger and better and
more
open source?
Yeah, well, this is an interesting, they have set an interesting precedent here by kind of penalizing folks coming in on older browsers. I wonder, one, will it stick? Will they keep it? Or will there be a backlash that will cause them to say, we're just kidding? Or could it become a trend and other retailers start picking up on it?
It'd be interesting to see it become a trend. If someone like an Amazon or someone like that jumped on board, I think you'd find IE7 would die very, very quickly.
Yeah, when dollars and cents are thrown at it, then it...
Yeah,
then it would,
or you know, potentially eBay as well. Yeah. eBay and Amazon, you'd find IE7 would be gone in months.
Very, very, very quickly. Well, all right. Well, interesting. We'll follow that and see how that shapes up here in the future. All right, Gary, you threw a link in there to talk about X-ray lasers from tabletop devices. I have no idea why that's important.
I guess we never do until we see it on the desktop.
But, yeah. Why?
The bottom line is that this is the first time they've actually compacted an X-ray laser to something that takes less than a whole room to do that. So as they do that, you know, its ability to be integrated eventually into consumer products is just one step closer. So when you're dealing with coherent light at that frequency, the ability to carry like just exponentially larger amounts of data on a same stream and the implications for computing and storage and everything. I mean, it just, it's another generation leap in technology that's basically way down the road. But I mean, right. It's a breakthrough. It really is. It's a breakthrough that someday, hopefully, in still within my lifetime, would actually pay dividends, and I might see the benefit of that.
So is the ramifications of it carrying data across the beam, the X-ray? Is that is that the practical application for this?
I mean, do we
get to send more data that way? How's it better for me?
It's the broadest spectral bandwidth coherent light source ever generated. So basically, it can carry far more data than the frequencies that lasers are operating at now. So when you're dealing with fiber optics and transmission of data, it's a quantum leap in bandwidth compared to what we're using today. And today is impressive. I mean, what we're doing on Fios, and when you look at, you know, not only are we carrying voice and data at great speeds for downloading video on the internet with our computers in a home with a gigabit LAN and several computers attached, and nobody even notices a drain on the bandwidth. But that same fiber is bringing in all my HD channels up to my television too. So, you know, we've got tremendous bandwidth at current frequencies. You throw in laser frequencies, and my God, it's, you know, bandwidth is never going to be an issue in the future. People are going to say, what was a bandwidth problem at some point? You know?
Yeah, well, but always the need always fills up the available bandwidth, right? I mean, it's we always find more ways to use the bandwidth. So could this have interstellar implications? In other words, can I send my data through an X-ray, I mean, it's to another location and get the data there, get more data to the moon or get more data to Mars that way. Do you know?
Well, the time it takes to transmit's never going to change because the speed of light is the same, but the amount of data you can transmit in one chunk is going to be much broader.
Yeah. Sure. Well, you know what? We'll have to throw this in Christian's corner and have him get a NASA researcher on the show.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah. Actually, you know, I talked to Christian early in the week and I jokingly said on the show last week, I said, okay, so you need to start lining up, folks for us to interview. You know, you're in NASA, for God's sakes. Let's take advantage of it. And I was kind of joking, and he's kind of doing it.
Absolutely.
So we have some stay tuned if you're new to the Home Tech Podcast. I think this could be a real interesting summer of some real interesting interviews as we bring on some senior scientists out at the NASA facility and hopefully have some very, very interesting interviews, as well as he's going to try and line up a couple interns as well and kind of get day in the life of an intern and some of the projects they're working on. We all know Christian very well and what he does, but it'd be interesting to know what some of these other interns are doing and some of the things that they're doing as well. So stay tuned to what is coming ahead. I'm pretty excited about what Christian has in store for us. Okay, Gary, one more thing for you. World map websites.
Yeah, that's a cute little link, I found it rather interesting. I mean, I thought I knew everything there was to know about the World Wide Web, but you pull up this map, and it tells you which websites are dominant in what regions of the world. Greenland is obviously dominated by Google because they both start with G, but so is North America and South America, and Australia, India, Europe, and Saudi Arabia, and most of the Middle East. But then in Russia, there's a website called Yandex, I've never heard of, which dominates Russia. @MailRU seems to dominate the Balkans region, or southern Russia. Facebook dominates
Gary, Hey, Gary, send me that link again, or put that link back in there, because I'm getting a 404 on it. I want to show this in chat. Drop that back in the... correct it for me.
Copy that and
let's try that again. And while you're talking, I'll see if I can bring that up on. Now I get a 404 when I go there.
Anybody else try it from the show notes? Let me send it to you over Skype.
Okay. I think this could be very, very interesting.
It is. It's a cool map. And there's Baidu that dominates China. And interestingly enough, Japan is dominated by Yahoo. Oh,
yeah, I believe that.
Yeah, and...
Yahoo's huge in Japan.
And everything north of Andrew from, looks like, New Guinea and the Philippines and Indonesia looks to be dominated by Facebook. Facebook actually dominates North Africa as well. And then there's this thing in... There you go. You got it. And then there's @mail.ru. So I don't know what that is either. But Yandex, I had heard of Baidu. I was surprised to see Yahoo in Japan. So, you know, Google you expect to dominate frequently. Facebook dominating North Africa makes you wonder. So I just thought it was an interesting map to take a look at.
Yeah, very cool. Andrew, we lost the map because we... Oh. Yeah, there we
sorry,
go.
I changed. I'm glad I changed to something that was a family safe.
You still can't get it, Jim?
I know, I couldn't get it, but that's okay. I've got it up.
Interesting.
I've got it up
here. Try the bottom link in the notes, Jim.
Okay. Oh, that's okay. I have it up now for you, Andrew. So yeah. We'll show folks there, and we'll get the right link in the show notes for them if they want to take a peek.
Yeah.
Is that so, Gary? Is that drillable at all? Can you like click on Google and okay?
Nope. It's just a visual map.
Very cool.
I'd love to see the supporting data behind it.
Yeah, it would be great if it was drillable.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Okay, well, let me talk a little bit about. Let's see, did you have anything else, Gary, that you want to talk about?
Yeah, just a couple of cool little things. I set up for a friend a brand new Dell computer, an XPS 8500, DOA right out of the box.
Wah wah wah.
Cut the seal, set it up. Got it.
That doesn't happen with Dell.
I was shocked. You know, I'm telling the guy buy a Dell and you know put egg on my face. We took it back to Best Buy, swapped it. The second box ran fine. So, well, as well.
It was a Best Buy Dell.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I told him to order it direct from Dell, but like always, he doesn't listen to me. And then the other thing was MS had a massive update drop Tuesday that killed one of my servers. I had to actually, you know, it's a headless server. I had to take it out of the rack and put it on a keyboard and a monitor to get it straightened out this morning. And then I just got a call from a friend in my neighborhood that knows I do computer work, and he called me and, you know, my computer's been running this update all night, and he had to kill his box and reboot it in order to get it to take. So apparently this last Dell or MS update was a doozy, might have had a bug at the end. And then finally, you know, you had some chatter about Microsoft buying Yammer and wanted to know if that was good news. And I thought, well, maybe it's good news for Christian because he's writing the whole API interface for all the data underlying NASA. So,
yeah.
And he's tying it up to Yammer. So he may be, like always, in the right spot at the right time doing the right thing. He is a lucky kid, man. He is. He's got the luck of the Irish. There's no doubt about that. And then he tortures me every day because he knows how much I love aviation. Oh, yeah, Dad, I walked outside for lunch and the F-22s are in formation doing aerobatics right over the building at lunchtime. So he's having the time of his life.
He really is. Yeah, I don't feel sorry for him at all.
You can't.
No, I don't. Yeah, so he mentioned it a little bit last week that he's working on the API to bring data in Yammer. Now, for folks who don't know what Yammer is, because I got a couple of those. So this was a part of a discussion that we posted out on the Average Guy Facebook group page. So if you're listening to the podcast and you want to join us for those kinds of conversations, just go out there and join the group. Just ask to join, and I'll approve you right away, and you can jump in the conversation. And I asked, there's been some rumors coming out of the Silicon Valley that Microsoft is looking to court Yammer. Yammer is really just an enterprise Facebook. So it allows organizations to purchase. This is their the way they're going to make money. So folks come in and they can sign up for a domain. So like I work for Gallup, so I would sign in with my email account, jim@gallup.com, and I would join the Gallup domain. Until Gallup pays, that domain is open, and you can have domain admins that kind of monitor it. But if you ever want to lock down that domain so that only Gallup people can be on it, Gallup would purchase from Yammer the ability to lock that down and get stronger admin rights into the organization. And so the thought is, hey, Facebook's great, but it's open to everybody. We'd love to have a corporate Facebook-like social networking environment. So Yammer is given birth at that point. One of the interesting things, of course, Microsoft lives in this space and would love nothing more than to plug this into their Active Directory services and organizations and make it a part of their SharePoint offering. SharePoint has marginal social. Marginal social capabilities in SharePoint. Yammer looks just like Facebook, and so the adoption rate would be much higher. Organizations, I think, would take to it faster. So I
the need for talented programmers who can tie that all together would grow exponentially.
Yeah.
Just so Gary can retire.
I am retired.
You are, Gary. You're gonna start taking a tithe from Christian, right? He's paying you back 10%, whatever.
You know, it's the old story. You know, you get back 100-fold what you invest in your kids. Really do.
Yeah, no, that's good stuff.
Yeah.
So if you want to join in that conversation, we won't necessarily talk about it here because we're running short on time. But if you want to join us in the conversation, head out to Facebook, search theaverageguy.tv or The Average Guy Podcast, and find our site, and then just join the group conversation, and you can be a part of. We have started a new segment this last Wednesday called Wacky Tech Wednesday, and I'm looking for your weirdest articles that are tech-related that we can kind of share out there. I thought that'd be kind of fun. Everybody's got these weird things that they find on the internet that are tech-related. And that would be a place that you can drop it and we can talk about and you can join the conversation out there. All right, I have just one thing this week, and actually it was started by Mike Howard. He runs the JPEG to RAW podcast and is often on the show here. He actually kind of behind my back, not really behind my back, but he started a Facebook ad for one of the posts that I had done. And he wanted to try an experiment. He'd been trying this on the JPEG to RAW show. So you can go out on Facebook and for as little as $5 or $10, you can purchase an ad and then really have some pretty granular specifications on who you market that to. And so you can either market the site, in this case it would be the Facebook, or there would be the Average Guy page, or you can market an individual post on that page. Like whenever I post a podcast, that becomes a post that's out there. And you can advertise on Facebook just that post. What I was amazed, guys, is how easy this was. Facebook has made this incredibly easy for a guy like me. In 1 minute, I had the ad set up and running. Mike's ad for $10 reached, 4,000 or 5,000 people. And so I got intrigued by this, and I thought, oh, this is kind of interesting. I'm going to try this out because for what I do, Facebook and Gallup, we talk to each other. And I thought, I want to know how this ad stuff works, because this is supposedly the future of Facebook and how they're supposed to make money in the future. I want to know how this stuff works, and it works. It's very, very easy to use, and it's kind of addicting. So show 76 last week went out. I bought a $10 ad. It was displayed to about 5,000 people. I had about 10 or 15 interactions with that ad. We picked up a bunch of likes on the Facebook page. I think we picked up 10 or so likes. We went from 10 likes to 50. Between Mike's ad and my two, we picked up about 40 or 50 likes on Facebook. So, I've always kind of had the opinion that those Facebook ads were not very effective. And I'm not an ad guy, so I don't know if that's effective or not. But it got some results. It was easy to use, and the average guy can do it. To me, that's the crazy thing. As for $5, you can take out an ad on Facebook, reach about, I'm going to say, 2,000 or 3,000 people that you can target. One of my ads, I targeted to 11 million people. That was the population that I was, that they were going to, attempt to show it to. Now, it wouldn't be shown to all 11 million. It'd be the first 6,000 that met that criteria. It would show on their page. The second ad I ran, I narrowed down to about 340,000 people. It was a Windows Phone. It was the Windows Phone podcast we did last Monday with Kevin Schoonover. And that got about 6,500 hits or 6,500 views, and had some pretty good clicks, and folks were interacting with it. And so, for a podcaster, a very interesting model on Facebook that you don't have to spend hundreds of dollars to get the word out. That, you know, so for example, on the Facebook page where I post the shows, show 75 was seen maybe by 25 people. When I did the ad, it boosted it up to about 3,000. So from a visibility standpoint, kind of interesting. You know, it certainly brings a new dimension to the word advertising. And now, will this be a model that makes Facebook billions of dollars? I don't know. But it certainly, for me, I've started thinking when I interview, we're getting set here in the fall to do some shows where we just interview various companies that are out there. We'll bring a product specialist from a company, and we'll interview them and their products and such. And I'd go back to them and say, hey, you know, if you want us to advertise this podcast and get the word out, you know, give us $50 and we'll drop an ad on Facebook, and our reach would go from the maybe hundreds that I have now to potentially tens of thousands of people through Facebook. Everybody's there. I don't know. Andrew, any thoughts on using Facebook as an ad platform?
No, given that seems to be its strategic direction, I reckon it's a good thing to get on.
Yeah. Gary, does that scare the crap out of you? Oh, no, I'm sorry, Andrew, do you have one more thing to say?
Oh, and given that it's relatively cheap in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, starting at $5.
Yeah.
I don't know. Gary, any thoughts?
I approach all of it as return on investment. So, you know, I'm more about collecting the $5 than spending the $5. But if in fact you can demonstrate that I can spend $5 on Facebook somewhere and somehow that's going to come back to me, whether it be, you know, boosting the traffic to BiosMods and getting more ad revenue on one of my sites that generates revenue. But that's been the fun part for us, is converting from a household that spends a lot of money out of hard-earned dollars to getting self-sufficient, where we've taken the equipment we've got, we've made the websites, and we do some consulting work, and actually we're taking in money and we're paying for our hardware and software with the revenue that we generate. So to me, it's not about spending money, it's about collecting it.
And yeah, and sometimes you got to spend it to make it, you know?
Well, I hear a lot of poor people say that. I've never worked for a wealthy person who's ever said that.
You know, a wealthy person would say they have to spend somebody else's money to make
it. There you go. And that's the way I'm starting to think. So.
Yeah. And I have, to be honest, I have not seen a significant uptick in the page views that, you know, that those ads are doing. Now, I haven't done a lot, and I haven't done a lot of analysis on it, so it's still up for review. But I found that very interesting proposition. Brian, any thoughts on your end on would you use Facebook ads or not?
I see using it for, especially like you're saying, for when we have a highlight particular guest on. I'm finding a little fascinating that the bottom of the live stream page currently has a Google say hello to a few new customers ad running down there.
Really? Yes.
So you can competition on that alone, and that has Facebook lights right below it too.
right. Yeah, there's a lot of competition now for ad dollars. I mean, it's really has moved to the local level for competition for ads. And I don't know. I had really never, Gary, to your point, I really had never considered spending any money to advertise for the podcast. I said this from day one. We do this podcast because it's fun. I don't have, I don't have high aspirations to turn it and make it a huge commercial venture. Certainly, we have ads on the page. So if you go to theaverageguy.tv, there's ads on the top and on the bottom of the page. And yes, if you click those are very helpful for us with Google AdSense. They, you know, we make a few cents every time somebody goes through, well, anywhere from a few cents to a dollar or more. And so that's very helpful. If you're out on the page and you see an ad that is interesting, click it. It doesn't cost you anything. It makes us a little bit and helps pay for the bandwidth. But I've always done the podcast really because I have a good time hanging out with you guys on Thursday nights. Just it keeps me sharp in what we're doing. But that was, I'll admit, it was a little bit like gambling. That I spent that $10 and then I watched the numbers go and I was like, oh, hey, look, I got this many clicks. I got this many clicks. Now, to your point, Gary, it wasn't making me anything, right?
You know. Well, yeah, but from the standpoint of whether or not it's, you know, I think, you know, the success in the future of Facebook is a very big topic right now. And I think that that's really the way the typical advertiser who's going to buy that $5 or $10 ad is probably going to look at it is, you know, am I going to get enough right. traffic generated on that it can generate some sort of a profit for me? So,
yeah. Yeah, and I'm sure there's some more analytics that need to be done. Mike and I are going to continue to kind of work on it and test it and try different. You know, certainly I was able to pick up, the goal was to pick up just 20 likes to the page through this advertising. And we achieved not only that, but we got 40 to the page.
And that's a worthy goal, but does it translate into an expanded podcast audience and more readership on the web page? Otherwise, it was just a fun thing to do.
Yeah. No. And you know what? So let me say with that, if you're listening this week and you're listening because you clicked on an ad, I mean, we had quite a few people see them and click on them. If you're listening to it because you came in that way, you're new to the podcast and you did it that way, shoot me a note. Just send me an email, podcast@theaverageguy.tv. I'd love to know, you know, even if we had one or two, again, I ROI isn't as important to me at this point. I'm just trying to figure out, does it get anywhere, right, at this point? Or did you actually come over here and listen to the podcast because you clicked on an ad in Facebook? I'm the debate that we're having in the enterprise is, does Facebook advertising work? And so that's kind of what I'm more interested in knowing, do people actually interact with these ads or don't they? And does Facebook have a chance to sell a bunch of these things to make, you know, to make any money? Because they're in the money-making business now too. They've got quarterly goals now that they're public. They have quarterly goals that they have to adhere to. And there's going to be a lot of public pressure. Anybody know what they closed at today from a stock price, Facebook? Anybody?
I didn't see the close, but I saw it go across the tape at about 27 and change at some point in the day.
So it's still kind of holding, steady in the low, in the upper 20s. Okay, well, guys, I think we're good on time here, and we're actually a little bit past our time. I want to thank you guys for coming on. Brian, good to have you as a part of the regular rotation. We'll be excited about your microphone arm coming, so we don't hear your keyboard in the future. I know you said a pre-show. You've got an arm coming that you'll attach your microphone to. Is that
yeah,
right?
I'm going to re-engineer one of my drafting arms for my drafting table to All right. hold my microphone arm.
Very nice. And how's the battery recycling business?
Going well. I just bought me a new SAN, so I'm going to be bringing home an actual AX4.
Oh, nice. I have no idea what that is. Tell me what that is.
That is a entry-level EMC iSCSI SAN, four trays, 48 drives.
And you're recycling it, I take it. You're recycling it.
I am the hot site.
Oh, yeah. Rent some space and get that out of your house. Well,
yeah,
thanks.
I'm on a colo. I'm going to start hosting.
Yeah. No, rent some space. But, Brian, good to have you on the podcast and have you as a regular part of the rotation. Gary, as always, good to have you on and filling in for Christian. We talked about we always felt like Christian would be probably out at least 1 week out of every month, maybe two. And you're always willing to fill in. Thanks for jumping in and doing it.
Pleasure.
Andrew, thanks in advance for the show notes. And thanks for taking thanks for the way I slid that in there. Really nice. Thanks for taking your Friday lunchtime to come in and join us. I'm always jealous that you get to the weekend before we do. You know?
Yeah, but you're always in the weekend when I go back to work.
I know. You're back on Monday and it's still Sunday. So, but it's great. You're always in there. And you know what? I tell people all the time, you and I have this great partnership in putting the show together because we're in different time zones. And so we record the show on Thursday nights. I zip it up and send it to you. When I'm sleeping, you're in the afternoon or evening working on it, getting some things prepped. And then almost always you've got some you're like, hey, the draft is ready. By the time I'm up, you're like, hey, the draft is ready. You can take a peek at it. That gives me some time to mix the show. I mean, we really do use the time zone to our the change in time zones in our favor. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it works really well.
Yeah, it does. So thanks for doing that. I appreciate it. For all those out in chat and for those listening on YouTube, thanks for coming out tonight. And this will wrap up another Home Tech Podcast. We do it again next Thursday at 8 p.m. Central, and whatever that is in your time zone, just Google it, look it up. Join us live. You can join us live each and every week out at theaverageguy.tv. Thanks again, guys. We'll be here next week. Yep, we'll be here next week, and then I'm taking a week off. So next week one, and then a week off. Andrew, you get a paid week off.
Awesome.
So, back next week. Have a good night, guys. Night.
See you guys.
Night.